Good evening. It's wonderful to be here with you all tonight. If you would take a Bible and open it to Exodus chapter 3. Exodus chapter 3 will be our main text of the evening. Tonight we're going to talk a little bit about excuses. Excuses are practically part of life. We use excuses for everything under the sun, from why we're late to work, to why we don't eat our vegetables at lunch, to why we didn't turn in homework. Excuses in our day are almost a form of art, and it's amazing just to see how creative some people can become in coming up with excuses. But children and adults alike will become well-versed in giving excuses because they get us out of stuff. They get us out of trouble, out of a situation, out of work, out of blame. And we use excuses for exemption or release. And so it's no surprise why we find excuses so appealing, because you don't want to do something, well, you can give an excuse. You can get yourself out of it. Or if you do want to do something, you can give an excuse in order that you may. Excuses are typically used as a loophole to make something that is unacceptable that we would do or that we have done, then acceptable. You think for a second, it's probably a pretty wrong idea, and you probably wouldn't get away with slapping your brother in the head. But, hey, if he has a fly on his head, oh, well then, if we give that kind of an excuse, changes things. And don't get me wrong, certainly excuses aren't always frowned upon. They aren't always deceptive or even wrong, but certainly they can be very legitimate. Sometimes excuses are simply the explanation of why. For example, if we couldn't make it to dinner, why? Well, I had a flat tire. See, that's perfectly legitimate. And it's these type of practical excuses that we would understand. If we had someone who wasn't able to attend an event because they said, well, they didn't have enough time, or they didn't have enough money, or they already had plans, or perhaps they said they needed to spend more time with family. We would understand that. But let's face it, a lot of times, our excuses aren't that way. A lot of our excuses are not legitimate and perhaps would be very wrong if we gave them, even if sometimes they would be understandable or would seem to be appropriate. Say, okay, I am late for an appointment. And we say, well, oh, the reason is because of all this traffic. You just wouldn't believe it. Yeah, it may be that there was some traffic, but we knew there was traffic. It was rush hour. We knew it was probably going to take us a little bit longer to get there. And so really, it wasn't as much the fault of the traffic as it was my own fault. I didn't plan enough. I didn't prepare. I didn't do what I was supposed to do. And one place we find these type of wrongful excuses very apparent is in our spiritual lives. When we begin to give excuses to God, we need to be very careful. Because typically when God asks questions, our excuses don't cut it. Giving reasons to him why we didn't do something, why we weren't able, why we don't want to give these type of reasons, we almost always fall into sin. And excuses are present in almost every sin we commit, in that we make an excuse to ourselves and to God why it's okay to disobey him. And we could look at many different areas where this might apply, but one specific area I'd like to focus on tonight, where we're very prone to giving these type of spiritual excuses, is the excuses we give in not proclaiming the gospel. And let's be reminded that this is a command from God that we should obey. Mark 16, verses 15, also 2 Timothy 4, verse 2. They call us to preach, to teach the gospel. And one other passage I'd like to look at very quickly is 1 Peter 2, verses 9. These are all passages that we've looked at this morning. But this also calls us to share the gospel. And I really appreciate this passage because it's not concerned or given to evangelists or disciples and apostles, but this is given to the common Christian. This is something that we all need to do as we understand that we are a holy priesthood. It says in verse 9, but you are a chosen generation, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, his own special people, that you may proclaim the praises of him who called you out of darkness into his marvelous light. So to illustrate some points for us tonight, we'll be looking in Exodus chapter 3. starting in verses 1 through 10, we have this story of Moses being called at the burning bush. God has heard the cries of Israel. He has heard the oppression that they've been under through the Egyptians, and he's ready to deliver them. And so he calls Moses to take lead of his people. And as Moses is given this great call, he also gives quite a few excuses. And we can see how this is so much similar to our lives, the call that we've been given to share the gospel. Some of the same excuses that he gives, we do too. So I'd like to take a little bit to look over some of these excuses and see how they might apply to us. But the first one you see given is in verse 11. But Moses said to God, "Who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the Israelites out of Egypt? Who am I?" Now, this isn't a completely erroneous excuse. You think about this for a minute. We look at Moses and we see this great leader. We see the man who parted the seas. We see the man who gave law. He was the deliverer. That's what we see when we think of Moses. But this is before that time. This happens in the future. At this present state, it's a much different scenario. And if you look back to this previous state, what condition he's in at this moment, we might be very sympathetic to his excuse here. Because things weren't very good in Egypt. Yes, from the beginning, he seemed like things were going to work out quite well. He's taken from the Nile. He's the son of a Pharaoh's daughter. I mean, he's living in a lap of luxury, as we read in Hebrews 11. But everything changes when he kills an Egyptian, when he defends a fellow Hebrew. Look at Acts chapter 7 with me, if you would. Acts chapter 7. We'll start in verse 23. This presents a pretty different scenario than we typically think of when we think of Moses. When Moses was 40 years old, he decided to visit his fellow Israelites, and he saw one of them being mistreated by an Egyptian. So he went to his defense and avenged him by killing that Egyptian. Look at this, verse 25. Moses thought that his own people would realize that God was using him to rescue them, but they did not. The next day, Moses came upon two Israelites who were fighting. He tried to reconcile them by saying, "Men, you're brothers. Why do you want to hurt each other?" But the man who was mistreating the other pushed Moses aside and said, "Who made you a ruler and a judge over us? Do you want to kill me as you killed the Egyptian yesterday?" When Moses heard this, he fled to Midian, where he settled as a foreigner and had two sons. And after 40 years had passed, an angel appeared to Moses in the flames of a burning bush in the desert near Mount Sinai. Verse 25, Moses thought he was supposed to be the deliverer. I mean, he was ready. He had killed an Egyptian. It looks as if he's going to make this big deliverance. But the people reject him. And not only that, they mock him. One of his own men says, "Who makes you a ruler and a judge?" And to further the complications, you'll see why Moses ended up fleeing to Midian. In chapter 2 of Exodus, verse 15, it says, "When Pharaoh heard of this, he tried to kill Moses. But Moses fled from Pharaoh and went to live in Midian, where he sat down by a well." So, not only do his people reject him, but the Pharaoh has threatened his life and wants him dead. And you can see how these painful memories would deter Moses. "You want me? Do you realize who I am? I'm the person who's been rejected. I'm the person who's on the most wanted list back in the day." And that's the other thing. Time had passed. It talks about in Acts 7 that when he left, he was 40 years old. And at the time that his call had been made, 40 years had passed. "You want me now that my life has doubled? You want me now?" You can see why this excuse would make a lot of sense. He felt used up, washed up, probably good for nothing. This isn't my time. My time was then. If I wasn't used then, why now? But look at God's simple and profound answer. Verse 12, "Surely I will be with you, and this will be the sign to you that I have sent you. When you bring the people out of Egypt, you and they will serve God on this mountain." You know, it's amazing God's response doesn't even answer Moses' specific question. Moses says, "Who am I?" And God doesn't say, "Oh, Moses, you're a great man. You're settling yourself a little short here. You actually have some wonderful qualities." He doesn't answer that question. And really, that answer to that question isn't important, but the answer that God gives, that's what's important. "Surely I will be with you." And really, that's the overall answer to any man of God who sees himself as inadequate. It's summed up by that simple phrase, "God will be with us." Really, this should eliminate any excuse we have to offer. And Paul will clarify this by saying, if God is with us, who can be against us? That's the theme of this commission, and that should be the theme of ours. If God is with us, we can do anything. Servants' abilities make no difference if God is present. And as we begin to question ourselves and be astounded by how God would use someone like us, we need to remember that with God, all things are possible. Multiple times in the New Testament, the disciples observe that Christ is with them. Romans 8, verse 31, Matthew 28, verse 20, it says, "To the ends of the earth, I will be with you." God is with us, and we can do all things through Christ who strengthens us. That's his answer. That's our answer. But you know what? God doesn't even stop there. He gives them a confirmation sign. He says, Israel will worship on this mountain afterwards. They will worship here after you've brought them out of Egypt. He says, do what I say and you'll see. When you come to this point, again, you'll realize just how true these words are. But this doesn't satisfy Moses. He gives another excuse. Verse 13. First he doubts in himself, and then he proceeds to doubt in God. Verse 13, then Moses said to God, "If I come to the people of Israel and say to them, 'The God of your fathers has sent me to you,' and they ask me, 'What is his name?' what shall I tell them?" Again, a pretty legitimate question, and a question that really is relevant in our day and time. I mean, who is this God that we serve? There's a lot of people that believe in one God, but not the one true God. People will give more merit to prophets such as Joseph Smith, people such as Buddha or Muhammad. This is a question that is relevant, that needs to be answered. And how much more in his culture? How much more living in this culture of polytheism, where they believed in many gods? He truly did need an answer. And we see in Exodus chapter 5 and verse 2, it says Pharaoh himself will confirm that this excuse is relevant, because he says, "I don't know the Lord." He needed confirmation. There were going to be questions. You know, as he came to the Israelites, "Who's this God you're talking about? You know, who are you to come up here with this person you've talked to at a bush? Why should we leave after being here 400 years? Who is this God?" And God replies in verse 14. He says to him, "I am who I am." And he said, "Thus you shall say to the sons of Israel, 'I am has sent me to you.'" God furthermore said to Moses, "Thus you shall say to the sons of Israel, 'The Lord, the God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob, has sent me to you. This is my name forever, and this is my memorial name to all generations.'" Now, this title would have had a profound impact. And he says, "I am that I am. I am has sent you. I will be who I will be." Now, the significance of this verb could have been appreciated by both the Pharaoh and the people. I mean, the fact that he is an inherent being, that he self-exists, he's self-sustaining. And we're reminded of Genesis 1:1, perhaps, in this verse. "In the beginning, God." No mention of his creation, someone creating him, simply he is. He is in the beginning. He is the sovereign, independent entity of all creation. And also there is a significance in the fact that this title that he continues, that he is the Lord, the God, the father of Jacob, the father of Isaac. I mean, this would have been relevant to them. This would have reminded them of the promise that God had given them. The promise that they probably understood that they would be delivered out of this land. This would call them to that. Not only does he stop there, but he also grants them strength in numbers. If you look in verse 18 through 21, he says that your people are going to listen to you. they are going to follow you. And then in verse 18, it says, "Then they will heed your voice, and you shall come, you and the elders of Israel, to the king of Egypt, and you shall say to him, 'The Lord, the God of the Hebrews, has met with us. And now please let us go 3 days' journey into the wilderness.'" He tells them, you don't have to do it alone. The elders are going to be with you. They're going to present this name before him as well. But again, another excuse. We begin in chapter 4, and Moses will say, "Then Moses answered and said, 'But suppose they will not believe me or listen to my voice. Suppose they say, the Lord has not appeared to you.'" Again, a very legitimate case. I mean, what's different now? I need some kind of credibility or some kind of evidence because I've been through this before. I've come and I've tried to deliver the people, and they rejected me. And certainly, he's already been warned that Pharaoh's going to need some convincing, so what's going to help him do that? You know what? Why now is a nobody? How are they going to listen to him? He needs some kind of confirmation. And God sympathizes with that. And he gives him some answers. Three signs are given. First, in verses 4 through 2, he's going to turn a staff into a snake. Moses will throw down his staff. It'll become a serpent, and then he'll be able to pick it back up again as a staff. And then also, in verses 6 through 8, there's this sign of leprosy, that his hand will become leprous. He'll be able to put it inside his coat, and then he'll pull it out, and the disease will be there. But then he'll put it back in again, and it'll be healed. And then finally, verses 9, he'll turn water into blood. And there's many suggestions on why this might be important, why this could be significant. Perhaps there's a foreshadow of the plagues, obviously, that might be seen by the water. Perhaps there is some symbolism there in the fact that Pharaoh, or at least the Egyptians, often looked as Egypt to have a symbol of a serpent. And a staff was a symbol of authority, so perhaps to turn this snake back into a staff would show his authority over Egypt. But whatever explanation is given, there's one that's for certain. These signs were unmatched by any other god. What other gods pretend to do, Yahweh actually does. Moses' God is, in fact, divine. And it's interesting how we too will worry about our message. We'll worry about what we're able to perform, the evidence we need. We've got all these other religions and beliefs who present some pretty strong cases, who have some pretty appealing messages, some pretty appealing signs. And so we too might grow a little bit insecure, but we need to understand our message too has evidence. We too have signs. We're not empty-handed. We have been blessed with the true God and a true message. Our message can be verified. The scripture will back it up. It gives us proof. And if necessary, it can be shown through archaeology, through prophecy, through science, and through standard logic. If people will just use their minds, they'll be able to understand and see that this is from God. But this excuse is not acceptable either. These last two excuses that are given are extremely irrelevant. They're extremely relevant to us. I think they might perhaps relate to us best of all. Verse 10, "Oh my Lord, I'm not eloquent, neither before nor since you have spoken to your servant, but I am of slow speech and as slow of tongue." And again, this is another extremely relevant issue. You think about the servants and the officials that Pharaoh would have had who were proud of their eloquence and their considerable speech. And Moses is supposed to address him in his court on his terms. In Acts 7, verse 22, it'll state that Moses was instructed in all the wisdom of the Egyptians, and he was mighty in his words and deeds. But again, this is 40 years later. Now, this is after he's been out of Egypt, out of practice. And I think about how I was in math. In high school, in first couple years in college, when I was still taking math, I was pretty proficient. I was making pretty good grades and could keep up with the best of them, I felt. But after a couple years, it's only been about 4 years since I've taken a legitimate math class. If you ask me how to factor, even if you ask me how to do long division, you know, I'd be in trouble. And Moses here is asked after 40 years to stand up to Pharaoh. And let's take a second and make this very relatable for us. In America, there's been a survey taken of the top fears. And number one on the list is fear of public speech over the fear of death, over the fear of heights, even over the fear of spiders. Many of us would rather eat a cockroach before go and give a public speech or some kind of presentation in front of people. I mean, this is kind of scary stuff. And Moses is going to go before the most powerful ruler in Egypt and make a request of unfathomable proportions. He wants 3 days, every man, woman, child, to leave work and then to take animals to be able to sacrifice in a religious ceremony. Again, all right, let's make this a little bit more relevant to us. You think about the imposition that could be, that would be on some kind of ruler. You think of Hitler. Imagine having to come before Hitler during the time of World War II and ask him to release all Jews from all camps to be able to go 3 days and celebrate Hanukkah. Can you imagine having that kind of burden on your head? Because this really isn't so dissimilar. The situation is pretty difficult. Pharaoh, too, says in chapter 1, verses 11 and 12, and then 16, it says he had set taskmasters over them to afflict them with heavy burdens and dreaded the people of Israel. And later we'll see that, you know, all firstborn males are killed. You know, and this ruler has come in line next to him, and they're still under heavy labor, heavy burden. You know, he still, too, fears probably this deliverance that could happen. And this is the kind of request that Moses is going to have to make. We make excuses for not having Bible studies because I don't know what I'm going to say to one of my friends. This is the situation that Moses has. And what's amazing is, as intimidating as this is, God considers it an inadequate excuse. Verse 11, God will reply, "Who has made man's mouth? Or who makes the mute, the deaf, the seen, or the blind? Have not I, the Lord? Now therefore go, and I will be with your mouth and teach you what you will say." And that, what a response. It's here that God makes clear that he's able to fully overcome any of Moses' deficiencies. You know, don't you think I know who you are? I'm the God who made all, who made those who can talk, who made those who can't talk. Moses, you're exactly the way I intended you to be for this mission. I know your capabilities. And he still calls him to do this. God has everything under control. I'll tell you what to say. And you think about if God was so worried, or if God really wanted a strong messenger, he would have chosen Moses back 40 years ago, back when he had some kind of role, some kind of position of leadership that people might have respected, where maybe he was still trained and equipped. But the point is that doesn't matter. It's not about us. It's not about our abilities. It's about God and obeying him and doing what he's told us. And God says, I'm going to put the words in your mouth. I'll teach you what to say. Again, it's not us who holds the power. God's intent isn't to use fine-tooled forensic champions, otherwise I would definitely have to walk right down and sit along with y'all. We confuse the true source of power with ourselves and our abilities, but God says we need to proclaim his word, his message. This is exactly what we see in 1 Corinthians chapter 2 when Paul speaks on such a way. And I, brethren, when I came to you, did not come with excellence of speech or wisdom, declaring to you the testimony of God, for I determined not to know anything among you except Jesus Christ and him crucified. Now, that's the whole point, that message. not our eloquence of words. We're made exactly the way God intended us. And he's made us capable of carrying out his mission, his call. And we simply need to do it. Moses gives one last excuse, the only excuse he has left. He says in verse 13, "Oh my Lord, please send by the hand of whomever else you may send." Can't you just choose someone else? And really, it's interesting to consider that the whole excuse is about, I just don't want to do it. And it's very interesting to see how God responds, verse 13 through 17. "So the anger of the Lord was kindled against Moses, and he said, 'Is not Aaron the Levite your brother? I know that he can speak well, and look, he is also coming out to meet you. When he sees you, he will be glad in his heart. Now you shall speak to him and put the words in his mouth, and I will be with your mouth and with his mouth, and I will teach you what you shall do. So he shall be your spokesman to the people, and he himself shall be as a mouth for you, and you shall be to him as God. And you shall take this rod in your hand, and with it you shall do many signs.'" Now, this is the only time that God actually expresses his anger. But it's amazing that he still works with Moses. God alleviates even some of the responsibility, but he doesn't let Moses off the hook. He says Aaron will speak, but still the staff is in Moses' hand. He's the one who's going to be leading. And again, I think this last excuse makes for some very necessary truths. An excuse given to proclaim God's message is merely that. It's an excuse. It's not that we can't, it's that we simply won't. And again, it's amazing how God will work with our hesitancy and provides means to accomplish his will. He really sees Moses' excuses and sympathizes with him. The whole time, he gives him the means to be able to accomplish these tasks. And it's only when we won't do what he says that he is irritated. He will get angry. But again, even here, it's amazing how he works with Moses where he's at. And he says, "You know what? All right, we'll take Aaron. We'll use him." And I think that's interesting for us to think about, to see how, although we have a call, even if we're not fully prepared or think that we can, God allows us to use other avenues. God allows us to have other people that can answer the questions that maybe we can't, and to perform where we can't. But God still expects us to do his will. And as we make some final observations, we've seen that these excuses that are given aren't just petty excuses that are just desperate, but these are major concerns. And the same as probably a lot of our excuses. Some of them could be very legitimate and very plausible. But even in these situations, God says they're not acceptable. And he still calls us to proclaim his message, to do his will, to obey him. And every provision has been made for us. And you think about, if God used Moses with his excuses and didn't let him out of this, go into this land, go into a ruler of a country, will he accept our excuses to tell our friend, to share the gospel with our neighbors, to share the gospel with our family? Our call isn't necessarily as extreme. And we should be that much more willing that we don't have to rebuke a Pharaoh, but that we have to confess a king. This is a blessed call that we have. And if we'll only see that God has made every provision, and in fact that, again, it's not about us. It's about him. We simply have to present his message and his word. Let's preach the gospel. Let's share it with others. Perhaps at this time you haven't been a Christian. Perhaps you've made excuses for yourself for some time, that you aren't able, that you're not good enough. God has made every provision for you. If you'll just follow him, if you'll just obey his voice and realize it's not about who you are, it's about who he is. It's about obeying him. If we can baptize you into Christ tonight, we'd love to do so. Please come forward as we stand and sing.